The cable news channel universe is one filled with a lot of voices. There are two paths to take if you want to stand out. You can show up with substance or the sensational. My next guest is a cable news host as well as editor-at-large of The Nation, who chose the first option of substance. And, you know, even if you disagree with the view expressed, I think at least this style encourages debate and discussion. That's never a bad thing. As he celebrates his fifth year in primetime on MSNBC, he joins us now to talk about his show, All In with Chris Hayes. It's, of course, Chris Hayes. How are you today, sir?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
MSNBC.com/all is you can check up on what Chris's activities are during the week, 8 p.m. Eastern, and you can also watch clips and all the great stuff that a website allows you to do. You know, as far as your show, how did it all begin for you? Because as I said, you were a print guy before a TV guy.
That's right. I was a writer for years. I sort of ended up kind of sliding into TV as a guest, and then a guest host, and then a host. And so it's been quite a learning curve, to be honest. I mean, I think I underappreciated all of the kind of craft and technique and details that go into being good at TV, making a good television show. There's a lot of work that goes into it that I think when you're watching it, you're watching it. You're not thinking about all the things that have been done, the fact checking of every graphic that goes up, the choices about where the camera cuts to. And so it's been interesting in that way to learn about that.
Well, and as far as, you know, what's your goal with your show? When you sit down every night, depending on the guests, obviously, but what's when 9 o'clock gets there and you're handing it off to Rachel, what do you hope you accomplish every night?
That's a great question. I hope that I inform and entertain. I hope that, one of my favorite things to hear from a viewer is that they learn from the show, that's really important. Or even if I'll talk to my parents and they'll be like, I didn't know that with the thing that your guest said last night. I never knew that. That's really, that's our central imperative, is that people leave the show knowing more about the world and the country and public life and politics than they did going in. And also, crucially, that it's enjoyable, that it's, that it's entertaining. The hour flies by, that it's not a slog, that you feel compelled and entertained and delighted, and perhaps maybe you might laugh a few places. Yeah. Those are sort of those are the twin goals.
Yeah, you can be informative without being, like, as I call it, PBS stiff.
Right, yeah, we try to I enjoy doing the show, and I hope the viewer enjoys watching it. That's sort of the idea.
For you, where is the line between journalism and commentary? Because that's a line that a lot of people can confuse real easy.
I don't think it's that hard and fast. I mean, I think reporting is really important. Reporting, unearthing new facts and bringing them into the world. Commentary can be opinion or analysis. I think more and more what you see is all that blended together in the way that media on all platforms functions. So I think it's harder to make like hard distinctions between all those things at this point. I think one of the things I think is important is to be transparent about yourself. I mean, people know when they watch the show that I have a certain set of principles, a worldview, values that I have that are very transparent. I'm clear about those. And I try to sort of use those to guide me through understanding the news, reporting on the news, commentating on the news, but also with an open mind and fairly. And I don't think those two necessarily are mutually exclusive.
And Chris Hayes, who, of course, is the host of All In with Chris Hayes, weeknights at 8 on MSNBC, celebrating his fifth anniversary, MSNBC.com/all is a website, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. And that's the perk of having the 8 p.m. seat for you versus a 10 a.m. seat where people are expecting just that's the news reporting time, and you're the news analyzing time.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, people's consumption habits, I think, have changed a lot. So I'm not sure, the sort of habits people once had about, when they watch what they watch. But yeah, I think that at our hour, people are looking, particularly at a time when you are digesting news all day, you're getting push alerts on your smartphone to try to synthesize things, explain things, put them in context.
A couple ideas just to throw at you. I always like to imagine H.G. Wells as science fact instead of science fiction. If you put 1990s Bill Clinton into the here and now, what are the results?
That's a really interesting question. You know, I think there's an argument to be made that 1990s Bill Clinton initiated the era we live in now. I mean, that was the sort of, that was one of the first big cable news 24-hour stories. Monica Lewinsky was constant and nonstop. You had a real sort of initial kind of polarization happening, particularly with the Gingrich Congress. So I think that's an interesting question, because I think the Clinton era, and particularly the Clinton impeachment, sort of inaugurated our current era. I think that Clinton, there's two arguments to be made. One is that in the Me Too era, that what he did would be taken even more seriously, and he would have a harder time surviving it. The other is that, so that's one way to interpret the current moment. The other is the opposite, right, that we've seen that Donald Trump can get away with basically anything, that there's a kind of polarization effect that kind of locks in someone's support, and the mechanisms of information that people get are so sort of balkanized that, you know, Clinton would have survived the way that he did back in the late 1990s.
It is kind of odd how Bill Clinton and Trump share that ability to hold on to a base, and maybe with Bill Clinton even putting his base at risk because of the way he worked so much with Newt Gingrich back then.
That's right, and that is one thing that I think is hard to imagine these days. Is, you know, for all the polarization, you know, Gingrich and Clinton teamed on a whole series of legislative initiatives. That it's very hard to imagine that happening in our current situation.
Moving to the here and now, I saw you talk about this the other night, too, about VA Chief Shulkin getting shown the door and being replaced by President Trump's personal physician. And first thing I thought of when I heard that story was, well, given the ways and the shape of the VA right now, why not a physician, military veteran instead of a bureaucrat? How much worse could it possibly get?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something to that. I will say that I think that sometimes the challenges of VA, which are extremely serious and real and present, can overshadow the overall picture of the VA, which is that it's got huge challenges but also does a lot of incredible work, and in many ways and in many pockets is delivering some of the best care in the country. You know, so both of those things are true at the same time. I think the problem is that what you need, the VA is a massive administrative challenge. It's a management challenge. You know, even the scandal of people on the waiting list, that was not a care delivery problem, right? The thing that everyone says about the VA increasingly, and when I talk to veterans who are in the system, when I talk to people who work in the system as care providers, the problem isn't the care. It's getting the care, right? It's management of the system to make sure that there's enough access to the care. And, of course, the big scandal about people dying when they're on the waiting list wasn't about the care they were getting. It was about not getting the care.
Right.
So from that perspective, the problem is a management problem. It's how to make the system function effectively, how to make sure that there's accountability for making sure that people are being seen quickly, that there's a kind of triaging happening, that people who have the most severe cases are getting moved to the top of that queue. That all is not the kind of thing that someone necessarily who's a lifelong personal physician has experience with. I mean, we're talking about taking a guy who's been a doctor and very, you know, obviously a service member and obviously a very accomplished one and very respected and very widely liked across both parties, and putting him in charge of a $200 billion agency that presents one of the most difficult logistical challenges in all of the American government. I'm not quite sure that's a great match.
Although, like when Jack Welch headed GE, and GE had their fingers in everything at the time, one person couldn't know about all those industries. You hope that they'll surround themselves with the people who can come to them and say, well, we got this problem. Here's option A, B, and C. And as the head of the organization, you go, okay, we'll go with B, and we'll see how that works out.
That's exactly right. And you know, Welch, of course, is the model for this sort of one kind of management approach. I mean, that's the real question, right? Like, who's going to be the best manager of this agency? And I'm just not convinced that for all his, you know, positive characteristics, Ronnie Jackson's that person.
Well, as we close out the segment, happy anniversary to you. 5 years and many more. You can check out All In with Chris Hayes, weeknights, 8 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday, MSNBC on the web, MSNBC.com/all. Chris Hayes, thanks for being here today.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.